Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
That's right, it is that time of the week again when Owlpost is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, the incredibly, well, no, that's, you just have a milkshake, that's what that is. So she's the incredibly refreshed Drea Kaufman.
The deliciously fulfilled.
I love it. I mean, there's not really much better than just sucking down a good milkshake, especially if it's hot outside and you live in Phoenix, so it's hot
it
all the time.
It is very hot outside.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you know what else is hot?
The fact that we have a new review.
Yes! That's right! That's right. And they said the best 5 stars. This is by Intrepid Renegade. Great name. They say, I love this podcast. It's awesome to go through the books chapter by chapter again with intelligent commentary. I would like to see the episodes expanded to include either a Q&A or Potter news. Did you ever get an answer from JK on the Wizarding School before Hogwarts? You know what? We never did get an answer from JK.
No, we did not get an answer from JK.
And you know what? If you ask us questions on Twitter... with the hashtag Owlpost, we will answer them on the show. So, I mean, it's just up to you guys. You know, you want it. You got to ask us the questions.
We did have someone on Twitter share a really beautiful piece of artwork.
Yes.
By an artist named Carolyn Edwards, and who does Titan Comics cover art. But it's a really beautifully done Snape with the doe, which will come into play later on in the series. I don't think that's too spoily, but it's really gorgeous. So thank you for sharing that. And you are one very lucky person, Carl Morris. Thank you for sharing. And
It was awesome.
I hope you framed that bad boy.
Oh, no kidding. No, we love having that kind of stuff happen. But absolutely, you know, if you have a question for us, you know, we could do a question and answer section where we could say, like, hey, this question involves spoilers, so fast forward for a few minutes. You know, we can definitely do that. So, again, it's all up to the listeners.
At the end, so
yeah,
like,
there you go.
Spoiler unfree, unspoiler-free section.
Oh, Dre is just thinking so much better than I am tonight. So,
I don't know how that's possible, but...
You've seen
my calendar for the last 2 weeks. You would not know how that's possible.
I don't know. Apparently, I'm just deficient in the brain tonight. But if you would like to give us a review, as we got from Intrepid Renegade, go over to the old iTunes, Apple Podcasts there. Give us a star rating review. It really does help people find the show. You know, we do great. People are finding the show leap like crazy. And so we really do appreciate all the reviews we get. And as you saw, you know, if you write us a review, we talk about it on the show. So again, your Owlpost famous. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts, though. So anywhere you do happen to get your podcast, you can find us. We're on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. So make sure you're following the network there. And you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty, which really is a great place to catch up with us as we post the shows there every week. And, you know, if you have a question or something there as well, Dre and I will answer it. So we are happy to interact with anybody. We love it. And so find us there. And, of course, two, if you had maybe a further question you need to write longer on and you felt like you need to do that in email form, you can go over to thenerdparty.com/contact. Choose a show, choose Owlpost, and then that will come to Dre and I, and we'll get to talk about it with you that way. And maybe it'll be a question that we'd even read out on the show, so you never know what could happen. But, Drea, this week's chapter is number 19, The Hungarian Horntail. And I feel like it's a chapter where a few things happen, but really, it seems to me that if you're like, we're going to like sum up the entire chapter, it really is Harry's rotten, awful, no good, very bad day. Like, he's just, it is not a good time for him to be at Hogwarts right now.
It's just never ending. Just never ending. And he just can't catch a break, and no one wants to give him a break. It's just not good.
It really isn't.
So eloquent tonight, guys.
No, but you're absolutely right. It just, I mean, that is kind of what I came away from with the entire chapter, was it Harry can't catch a break with things. And, I mean, he's struggling with his friendship with Ron, which is non-existent at the moment. He is also struggling in school because now he's thrown into this tournament, which he has no idea what the first task is, and he has no idea how to prepare for it. And he is spending all of his time, which is great, with Hermione, but that's just, it's not as enjoyable as getting to spend it with all of them, because, you know, with, as it says in there, I thought it was really cute, you know, with, when Hermione's your friend, you spend a lot more time in the library than you do laughing. And so it's just not quite the same. And
well, for her, the library is laughing.
That's so, it's absolutely true.
But yeah, you don't maybe play outside as much as you normally do, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, and there's another person in the library too. They happen to see Victor Crumb there all the time as well, poring over books. And so apparently he's a bit of a book nerd.
I love how annoyed that makes Hermione.
Yeah.
I love how annoyed that makes Hermione.
Well, it's because his, like, entourage of, like, fangirls are following him into the library and interrupting her peace and quiet while she studies, which I kind of thought was great.
I know. I just imagine this, like, flock of teenage girls following him around, mm-hmm. and this, like, like subtle sigh every time just from, like, him and probably Hermione, too.
Yes. Well, it doesn't really help that everybody has seen this Rita Skeeter article, and the way that the Quick Quills put it down and the way that Rita Skeeter puts it down, it was so melodramatic, and it makes Harry seem like that as well. So
it's like all about Harry. Yes. Like, the entire article is just all about Harry,
mm-hmm.
which is annoying for Harry and the other victors. Or champions, I guess.
She misspells people's names, you know, from the Durmstrang and the Bobatons champions.
Well, and I believe it also says that she completely leaves off Cedric.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, he wasn't even mentioned at all.
He wasn't even mentioned.
So, in fact, maybe one of the very few bright spots is when he drops his quill in class and Cho picks it up for him and they have a little meet cute.
You mean when he yells at her and then realizes that she's just trying to
pretty
pick
much
up his quill,
pretty
and
much.
Then he's like,
yeah.
I think that adds into the no good, very bad, day.
Oh yeah. What's so funny too is you get this thing where, like, Ron and Harry are not talking, so Hermione's going back and forth between both of them, trying to get them to talk to each other, and neither of them is budging. And, you know, you can understand both of their points of view. I specifically understand Harry's. It's like, you know, I didn't do anything. You know, I didn't, and he didn't. So I think it's very interesting, this whole back and forth game. And she's just kind of furious at both of them at this point, which, you know, there's nothing worse than being stuck in the middle with two feuding parties.
For no good reason.
No, they're definitely just being kind of jerks, so.
They're being preteens, they're being teenagers, just emotional and angsty, and I apologize to any teenagers out there who are emotional and angsty and took offense to that.
Well, I know I did, but.
I know you did. I'm
but
sorry.
I'm not a teenager anymore, so I should stop being so angsty. You're love
still emotional though.
I mean, who doesn't like, you know, cry at those commercials on TV where, you know, just kidding.
Where they're getting home insurance for the new baby.
Oh gosh.
Or the Amex commercial where the dad's applying for the loan with the baby on him and you're like, it's too real.
Or the one where the dad watches his daughter and she throws the baseball and he realizes she's good at baseball, so he buys her the baseball glove and then he buys her the cleats and then he buys her, I think, the bat, and then he buys her the trophy case. Is that, you know, like, it's an Amazon commercial. Anyway, it's just really cute.
Those make us emotional.
Anyway,
everyone has got a very deep insight into our lives.
So I absolutely adore, though, that they go to Hogsmeade and Harry's like, you know what? I don't want anybody to see me. So he wears his invisibility cloak to Hogsmeade, and Hermione's like,
he doesn't need to.
And he doesn't know, but I get why he wants to just be there, but not have any, be invisible. Mm-hmm. And I love that Hermione's like, Harry, this is stupid. Everybody thinks I'm crazy. I'm just talking to myself.
I like that his response is, just move your lips less.
Yes.
How would one do that? I mean, there's only so much I can do. And at some point, I'm still moving my lips and people still think I'm crazy. I'm just now muttering under my breath instead of talking to myself.
Yeah.
I don't think one's better than the other.
It is kind of funny because the whole idea of doing that. I mean, like, every teenager kind of wishes they could disappear sometimes, you know? I mean, that's the funny part of the...
Everyone wishes they could disappear sometimes. I'm not chalking that one up to teenagers. That's everyone.
It's true. I guess that's why, quote another commercial, want to get away.
Mm-hmm.
So...
This is a really commercial-heavy episode, guys.
It is.
Everything comes back to some form of commercial.
I also love that they go to the Three Broomsticks and they're sitting there and Hermione's like, you know what? This will give me time to get my spew homework done. And Harry's like, when are you going to give this up?
When are we going to be done with this?
And her answer is pretty much the same, almost like L3. What do you want? Equal rights? You know, and she's like, when house elves have decent wages and working conditions? Like...
Yep.
Oh man, it cracks me up that she still has also not gone into the kitchens to figure out what their life is really like and actually talk to a house elf. It is very funny that she's still not done that. So, you know, another bad thing for Harry is everybody's wearing, well, not everybody, but most people are wearing these badges that say Potter stinks. And I absolutely adore the fact that they're sitting in Three Broomsticks. He's still invisible, of course, but he sees Cho walk in with some of her friends and she's not wearing a badge. And that makes him a little bit happier.
It does. I like the little brief moments of sunlight that they give him before we go on to find out that Hagrid wants to meet Harry at midnight tonight. And if you remember, he's supposed to meet Sirius at 1 tonight. Mm-hmm. The schedule's getting real full. His schedule's starting to look like my work calendar.
And late at night schedule, too.
Yeah, his middle of the night creeper sessions are starting to look like my normal schedule.
When you would normally be asleep, Harry's got a packed schedule.
Yeah. the 4-hour stretch of time I get at night. Is now fall.
Nope. You got two meetings. I also so
accepted as tentative.
So I want to ask you something. You know, this was really interesting because Moody can see through an invisibility cloak with his magic eye. That seems a little bit strange to me.
So that does seem really strange to me, and I had forgotten that, and I want to revisit that in a no spoiler situation, at the
appropriate time,
during the seventh book.
Yeah, middle of the seventh book.
Middle of the seventh book.
Because it actually,
we have some time, but
I want to, this is a question I would love to ask JK, because I feel like if she was rewriting this book, that maybe she might change that.
I was gonna say, I do feel like that's one of the things that she maybe hadn't quite fleshed out yet when she was at this point, that she kind of changed her mind about later.
Yes.
Because it doesn't make a lot of sense when you come to learn more about things later on.
It's one of the few things where I can point to and I'd be like, I think she...
I don't think she realized what she did. Mm-mm. Yeah, it's really not that important. There could have been easily been an extra sentence added where, you know, Hermione somehow bumps into him and they realize, you know, they use logical deduction to realize that he's there. You know what I mean? There's really a very easy... I mean, she's already painted the fact that it's difficult for Harry to move around the three broomsticks because there's lots of people and he's invisible. He's not, like, non-corporeal. So he can still be heard and touched and smelt. So he can't like just walk in and walk through people. He still has to kind of like weave through the crowd, even more so that he can't touch anyone. So you know, it would have been very easy for her to write in here that, you know, he kicked someone or tripped, or, you know, he's just not as graceful and as he thought he was when he came in, you know. There could have been easily a way to have addressed the same thing without it being that Moody's magic eye can see through the cape.
No, I 100% agree with you. I think you're just right on target. And I kind of love Hagrid enjoying his little cloak and dagger. He pretends to be reading the Spew notebook and he tells Harry, "Hey, psst, meet me at my hut at midnight." Like, and then he gets back up as it, yeah, it's just, it's a funny kind of scene. Like, this would have been enjoyable. Yeah, it would have been enjoyable to see in the movie, actually.
I know it would have been. It would have been so fun.
Because there's some fun things like that that happen. And again, like, I think part of this is Rowling loves whimsy, I think. And this is one of those very kind of whimsical moments where the absurdity of it is just is kind of funny.
It's because it's really ridiculous.
It is very ridiculous. Well, not, I mean, is it any more ridiculous than when Hagrid is meeting Madame Maxime and they are on a date to go see dragons?
No, you ruined the rest of the chapter. I hope everyone's read the chapter.
Well, I would hope so if you're listening.
Yeah, I mean, I just love how Hagrid's character is. She sort of afforded herself the opportunity to have him be a ridiculous character and have ridiculous things happen surrounding him without it feeling over the top or too much or heavy handed.
Right.
So, you know, we get sort of this light with this sort of like, I'm a spy and I'm giving you a message with, you know, Hagrid. And then, you know, I like that Harry acknowledges that it's really unique for Hagrid to invite him to the hut at such a late hour. So he's willing to risk being late with Sirius.
Yes.
Because, you know, it must be a big deal if Hagrid wants him to sneak out. And then, yeah, you find out that he's on like a little date with Madame Maxime. And that you find out,
yeah, is awesome because
it's so cute.
You not only get to see it's going to be dragons if that's what the first task is, but I love that Charlie Weasley's there because we know that he works with dragons, which is great. I love that she continue. I mean, like she really obviously knows her continuity at this point from the previous books.
Yep.
And so that is really neat to have him here, and I love what he says to Hagrid is priceless. He's like, real romantic date there, Hagrid, shaking his head, like, to bring her to see dragons. And, of course, you know, Madame Maxime seems to be just enjoying the heck out of it. So it is such a funny scene here. And, of course, Harry is, well, one, he's being neglected by Hagrid, who is the one who was supposed to be showing him this thing that was so important. And Harry's kind of grossed out about this whole thing with the date. But then he's also more freaked out about the fact that he has to face a dragon.
Like, I know. He's like confused and then upset. And then you also hear Charlie Weasley kind of share a little bit about what's going back on at the Burrows with Mrs. Weasley, with Molly. And he's, I love his, impersonation of her, because you could just hear her voice. Mm-hmm. Oh, he still cries about that. I had no idea. Like,
yes.
I mean, I'm picturing my mother-in-law's voice in this case, but it's a real heavy North Dakotan, oh my, kind of accent. But
even though she's British, still sounds
even
like a
North
Dakotan.
British, in this case, she's North Dakotan in my head.
Which apparently sounds like Canadian.
Well, they're really similar.
They're really similar.
They're very similar. But anyway, yeah, I just love we get this little insight. And it shows, too, how influential Rita Skeeter's article really is. You know, even someone like Molly Weasley, who has a good head on her shoulders, who has inside knowledge about Harry, who probably can read the rest of the article and be like, this is hogwash, still believed part of it, you know? And I think that, again, we were talking last episode a little bit about, you know, the role that she plays with media and sort of the false media that goes with it and the grandiose and embellishments and stuff. And, you know, here it is that someone who we really respect as a character, at least, you know, I really respect as a character, is buying into it, at least in some sense. So while, you know, Rowling has her own kind of diatribe against it, she's also kind of showing you that, like, it still can have a big impact, and it's hard to sort of discount the entire article for parts of it. So it was really small and subtle, but it's in there, and it's really neat to get that little little glimpse back into the burrow of what's happening, because you have to imagine that she's freaking out about Harry being in the Triwizard Tournament. So, or what, the Quad Wizard Tournament in this case?
Yeah. You know, I think what I love about that is that it's such a mom thing to do, right?
Oh, like, yeah.
You know, when you hear something like this, her little mom heart just kind of breaks for him. And I love that. I think it just shows her in such a great light and who she is and how much she cares about Harry. But I also think you're onto something. It does really show that the media here is still something that people kind of trust, you know, even if it's Rita Skeeter, right? And that's fascinating to me that anybody would pay attention to her because of what I see so far from her is just awful. But, you know.
I mean, her article takes up pages 2, 6, and 7.
Yeah.
So.
Weirdly, though, is Harry is making his way back because he's rushing to get back to the common room. He runs into Karkaroff, who is also sneaking around, finding out
he's
about
like
dragons.
Hiding in a bush. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awkward. And who thinks it's a dog he ran into.
Yeah. No, not that. Not the serious dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he thinks it's like a small animal that he probably ran into.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's interesting. I like that Harry was quick, right? And as he's walking back, he's like, all right, well, at this point, the only champion who won't know what to expect is Cedric. Like, he puts that together right away. Like, I think if I were him, it might have taken me a bit. But yeah, I mean, he instantly doesn't trust the adults and is like, oh, they're going to tell their champions, and the only one who won't know is Cedric, assuming that, you know, Hagrid hasn't told Cedric. So I just thought that was really interesting that he instantly put two and two together and was like, oh, well, he's the only one.
Yeah. What I think it goes to show is just, you know, Harry thinks well, you know,
he does.
And he puts puzzle pieces together well. That's one of his strengths. You know, he takes information and is able to put it all together and what it means.
He's a strategic thinker.
Yes, yes.
He thinks about things, not just thinks, but he thinks in a very specific way.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting because as he gets to the common room, he's talking to Sirius. Sirius showed up in the fire, which I love how she says, you know, it's great that he had seen this before. Otherwise, he would be totally freaked out. And Sirius starts telling him all these things about Karkaroff and the Death Eaters and everything that's going on and how, you know, Karkaroff had been put into Azkaban by Moody and, you know, all of this background information, which it's so fascinating because all of this stuff starts to, like, the plot really thickens when we start to learn what we learn here, like, it big time.
Well, it puts together that nothing is sort of like coincidental, right? Everything from Moody's weird like trash can incident before he came to Hogwarts and why, you know, Arthur Weasley got involved, and then why Moody's there at all, right? He's not just there as the defense against the arts teacher, because we already know he's only there for a year. Yep. So he's not really interested in that. He already knows it's a favor to Dumbledore. You know, we're now kind of like, oh, okay, we'll Karkaroff's a former Death Eater, so it makes sense. We want to have an Auror here to protect the students, which we then find out is actually probably Harry. And then we come to find out that Dumbledore probably had some idea that something like this might have happened. And it's just, and that it has to do with Bertha Jorgens going missing. And like Sirius has got this whole thing plotted out in his head as to what exactly is going on. And it's like a complete, it's most of a complete evil plot. He picked up some tips in the clink. Mm-hmm. Just got to say.
Well, but I think what's so interesting here is that it, from what he's figured out, it seems to make sense with everything that we've gotten in this book. You know, the fact that Alistair was attacked before he was supposed to come to Hogwarts, the Death Eaters being much more active, especially at the Quidditch World Cup, you know, all of these things really seem to fit. And on top of that, we've heard about Bertha Jorgens getting lost, and apparently it was in Albania where Voldemort was rumored to be last. And he says, you know what? I was at school with her and she was just kind of an idiot, you know? And she's not the kind of person that, like, if she was taken by Voldemort, she would tell him everything, you know?
I like the description of her a lot better though. Like, oh, we went to school with her, I remember her, she's really nice and talkative and an idiot. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. Tries to be nice and then, no, I'm not sugarcoating this anymore, you know? Yeah. This is kind of, I don't want to say the first time, it's sort of the first time as viewers or readers that we're sort of seeing this, that Sirius is very candid with Harry. Just tells it to him like it is, doesn't sugarcoat it, doesn't really try to hold anything back, right? He's not like, oh yeah, she's lost in Albania and there's been some things there. You know, he's straight up is like, oh, yep, that's the last place we saw Voldemort. You know, also the first person to call him by his real name and not to call him he who shall not be named.
Yes. And it's the first time here that somebody treats Harry just like an adult.
Yep. Yep. Just is very frank with him. And I think that's part of why Harry is so protective of Sirius too, right? He values the relationship that they have, and therefore, you know, it builds the trust and he cares about Sirius. Mm-hmm. And we are sort of led to assume that they've had quite a bit of a development since he kind of freed him in Buckbeak, because they have a pretty intense relationship right away that has to have come from letters and things like that, because otherwise, I mean, this is a weird relationship to have with someone you met once and helped escape from death. But, you know, you can, I think it's reasonable to assume that they've communicated over the summer and things like that. So, but yeah, it's a tiny glimpse into a very crucial relationship in Harry's life. And a character that comes with a different approach from others that we've had. You know, Dumbledore cares, but is very withholding. And you've got Molly and McGonagall, who are very, you know, matronly and very motherly, mm-hmm, to him. Arthur Weasley kind of wants to share and is maybe a little more forthcoming than some others, but still kind of comes from a dad and he's a kid, you know. So this is really a very unique relationship that Harry gets. And it's interesting to see. And I love her little tidbit of just, if you're reading this through the first time or even the second time, it's really easy to miss that this is the first adult, and I believe it's the first character total, to call him Voldemort out loud.
Dumbledore, I think, has.
Yeah. I think he calls him Tom.
Tom Riddle.
He still calls him Tom, I think.
Could have called
him Voldemort. I actually would be interested to go back and check.
Yeah, that's a good question.
But the first one may be outside of Dumbledore then, which we
Voldemort's
afraid of Dumbledore, so that would make sense. But, you know, the first non-supreme wizard to call him by his name, you know? because none of the students do. The Weasleys don't. You know, no one does.
No, absolutely.
Know why yet? So, I like that later. She will explain why they don't. But I like that they don't.
Well, fortunately, or unfortunately, they are interrupted, and Sirius has to go because somebody's walking down the stairs, and it turns out it's just Ron, who's like, "Who are you talking to?" And Harry's
it's
like,
"Just Ron. No big like, deal, guys.
None of your business, basically."
Yeah.
And it does not go well because Ron's like, "Ooh, I guess you're practicing for your next interview." And so Harry picks up one of those buttons and throws it as hard as he can, and it bounces off of Ron's forehead. And he's like, "Well, there you go. Now you can wear this on Tuesday." Like,
I like that he's like, "Maybe it'll give you a scar because that's what you want, right?" I literally died because it makes no sense. I mean, it's not real. Like, he's clearly just pissy, and it's hilarious.
When we think about what Harry just learned, another person is out to kill him. It's the fourth year in a row somebody's trying to kill him. You know, it gets kind of old. And so
only legitimizes that he's right. Right? He didn't put his name in the Goblet of Fire.
Absolutely.
I mean, he knew that, but now he knows it's actually malicious and that he not only is he right, but someone should listen to him because this could get nasty. Mm-hmm. And Ron doesn't believe him.
Yeah. Which is the thing that I think hurts the most. It's his best friend who should be there by his side. And Harry doesn't handle it right at all, but I love how you can feel, like, she does such a good job of writing the emotion of Harry, so you feel it. You understand exactly what he's feeling, and you're like, yeah, I might have done the same thing. You know, like, just, especially being a 14-year-old boy, realizing your life is in danger again, and your best friend being a kind of a little turd about it because he wants all the attention. Oh, I'm sorry, you want somebody to kill you too? Like,
see, and I don't know if it's because he wants all the attention. I think it's just that he is jealous that Harry is getting all the attention. Like, I feel like if all this just went to Cedric, he could probably, I mean, he'd be like, "Oh, Cedric, oh, what's so great about him?" But he wouldn't be like as upset as he is, right? I think it's more that, like, oh, Harry's got all the attention again. Like, doesn't the kid just want to live in the limelight? You know, it just. It's one of those things where, like, if it wasn't a friend, I don't think he would care as much. But since it is, you know, he's clearly, like, super pissy about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's been a hard day. It's been a hard few weeks for Harry, and it won't get easier next chapter as the first task is about a week away.
And it's so, dragons.
It's dragons. Yeah. I mean, what could go wrong? So. If anybody does want to catch up with you, Drea, and talk about you not getting me a milkshake or
operating to
exactly. Where can they find you?
Sure. If you want to come see pictures of my cute little daughter, listen to me whine about my work schedule or withhold milkshakes from Matt, you can find me on Twitter at PCFchick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you'll find me on Twitter, MattRushing02, as well as Instagram, the same name. You'll probably just find me just crying profusely because I didn't get a milkshake, and I love milkshakes. You can also find me here on the network with John Mills talking about Star Wars on Aggressive Negotiations. It is a blast doing that show. I hope you check it out. If you like Star Wars, it is nothing but just Star Wars goodness every single week. You can find me over on the Trek FM network doing The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And then I'm also on our General Geek Show, talking about all the fandoms we love. Drea has been over there many a times as we've talked about the Harry Potter movies, Star Wars movies, Bond, DC, Marvel. I mean, as many things as we can cram in, we do in that show. So it's a lot of fun. And then last but not least, I do a show with my friend Courtney called Cinema Stories. And we talk about films through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.